Here in the United States, the Office of Homeland Security will be charged with protecting Americans against the kind of domestic attacks that have hurt so many in Kenya, Israel, and in other allied nations. But this week, as President Bush signed the new office into being, he cautioned that, quote, no department or government can completely guarantee our safety against ruthless killers who move and plot in the shadows. Now, in the coming months, a dramatic and wide-scale restructuring of the federal government will commence to accommodate this new office. More than 20 federal agencies will fall under its authority, including Customs, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the Coast Guard, and the Secret Service. Paul Light is a senior fellow of the Brookings Institution who joined us in our studios. Mr. Light, thanks very much for being with us.
Glad to be with you.
And Stephen Flynn is a senior fellow in National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, and he joins us on the line from Old Lyme, Connecticut. Mr. Flynn, thank you very much for being with us.
Delighted to be here.
And Mr. Flynn, if we could begin with you, you recently testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee and outlined the lack of preparedness, as you see it, that still exists in the United States against terrorist attacks. In this week in which we've seen two shoulder-launched air missiles come perhaps within feet of bringing down a commercial airliner, how vulnerable are we to that kind of attack in the United States?
Well, the conclusion of a task force that I just participated in was co-chaired by Gary Hart and Warren Rubin, was that now 15 months since 9/11, the United States remains dangerously unprepared and is dangerously unprotected from a second catastrophic terrorist attack. We really simply have not made much progress in making ourselves more secure.
Somebody could smuggle in a couple of missiles piece by piece, reassemble them, and shoot them at planes taking off from O'Hare, Hartsfield, LAX?
We built the national security establishment we have after the Second World War essentially for an away game, to take care of problems over there so we could largely pursue our lives unfettered here at home. And, of course, what happened is the bad guys have changed the rule book. They're now willing to come here. And we're having a heck of a time getting ourselves sort of recalibrated to deal with that new threat environment.
Mr. Light, does the attack in Kenya this week remind us that lightning can strike twice? Kenya has been the scene of terrorist attacks before, and we should not assume that Lower Manhattan, because it's been struck once, or any other part of the United States, will be immune.
I suppose so. We have this week as well the signature on the Homeland Security Department, and one of the things it starts out with is an extraordinary mandate to close gaps in the borders and to make us a more secure nation. I think that's a task that's going to take a long time to come to fruition, and we ought to lower expectations about what we can really have here by way of tightened security overnight.
We have to lower expectations even at a time when the threat is rising.
Well, a department does not by itself make us more secure. Reorganization is just a means to an end. The question is, what is the end we seek? The creation of a new department increases the probability of cooperation. It certainly increases the probability that the secretary will be able to enforce some level of cooperation, but we're talking about probabilities here, not guarantees.
Mr. Flynn, I gather you've called for 24-hour operation centers to be open in every state?
Well, one of the issues we face is there are estimated about 650,000 cops on the beat at the local and state level. And they're the most likely folks to bump into terrorists who are in our midst, either at a traffic stop or whatever. But unlike when we can pull us over, as they do, and they can punch into a computer to verify our license and our track record as drivers, currently they can't get any access to terrorist watch lists. And this has been a very difficult challenge, getting the federal government, one, to get these watch lists gathered together, and secondly, getting to the people who are most likely to come in contact with the folks who may cause us harm. One way to do that relatively quickly, we argue in this task force, is to create a 24-hour center with a round-the-clock connection to these key agencies that a cop on the beat can readily connect to and get the information he needs. And this is just a red light, green light kind of thing. Do I hold this guy because somebody in the federal government wants to get a hold of him, or do I just let him go because there's nothing here to cause us concern? I give him his ticket and gets on with life.
May I ask both of you gentlemen, this new department's supposed to be up and running by March 1st. What sort of changes do you think Americans will see and begin to notice over the next few months?
I think what they can hope for is a bit more coordination among some of the key agencies who are along our borders and some of the key players who deal with the response in the event of natural disasters. And right now, INS is in the Justice Department, Customs is in the Treasury Department, Coast Guard is in the Transportation Department. So to some extent, the ability to coordinate them will improve. But the federal government can only do so much to make ourselves more secure. So much of what is at threat is in our local, state, and is in private hands. And what we can hope for at best is, to some extent, is that the federal government won't act like the Keystone Cops it largely has been acting, because authority is so dispersed and because the capabilities are quite limited.
Well, do you expect, for example, that, let's say, next March 15th, when a plane takes off from Heathrow and lands at JFK, are we going to see something different? Is the process going to be different?
I don't think it will be. Hopefully, the person entering the United States or leaving the United States, the exporter or importer, is not going to see much of a change, visible change. But beneath the scenes, one would hope that there'll be more cooperation, that there'll be more information sharing. At the ports of entry and at the airports, for example, we've known for some time that these frontline workers don't often talk to each other. They have different coffee rooms. They have different places where they hang out. They have different training regimens and so forth, and they wear different uniforms. Hopefully, part of the reorganization will bring some sort of common mission sensitivity to all of them so that they're backing each other up more and they're talking to each other more. But most of that should be relatively invisible to the ordinary traveler.
Mm-hmm. Is it going to be difficult to demonstrate the success of this agency if, oddly enough, there is a definite diminution in the number of terrorist threats to the security of the United States?
Well, let me say I'm worried very much in the opposite direction. I think we're at a time of especially grave danger right now, mm-hmm. precisely because of the fact that we know that Al-Qaeda is back up and running. We may soon be at war with Iraq, and very little of what we've done since September 11th to try to get our domestic act together has been put in place. I'm not worried that there will not be an event that will justify the necessity for this initiative. What I do worry about, though, is that we are not going to move beyond a focus on the department and getting this federal reorganization. The states and localities are screaming. They're faced with very limited resources, difficult budgets ahead, virtually all of them in deficits. And it's there where we need the capability.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
And thank you.
Paul Light is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution here in our studios, and Stephen Flynn, a senior fellow in National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, speaking from Old Lyme, Connecticut.